You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Miss Ritchie, we meet again.
Would it kill you to wash the bag?
You can scream all you wish, Miss Ritchie. I'm afraid no one can hear you. What? Why isn't she screaming?
Miss Ritchie, if you don't mind.
Like this. Ah! That's a poor lady scream.
He's a little better.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Washman's got
hands. Make love in a hammock.
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 137 for the 25th of June, 2011. And just in case you'd forgotten, it was my birthday this week. Why have I got no vision happening here? There we go.
Because you're selfless.
Look, just to get really geeky for a minute, I was just thinking, you know that patent that came out on the IMAX where they said that it could become a touch screen?
Where, yes,
you know,
yeah.
That? I was thinking, how awesome would this board be if it was touch?
You would love that.
Oh, man, it would be awesome. Anyway, that's beside the point.
Stop geeking out.
I'm Dave McVeigh. Sorry, we just came off a geek show. I'm still geeked. I am Dave McVeigh. This is Josh Philpott.
Yeah.
And this is the official movie podcast of geekactually.com. Mm-hmm. This week, we are going to be reviewing the animated sequel Kung Fu Panda 2. Now, last week, we said we'd probably be doing Cars 2 if we were only doing one. Mm-hmm. I saw both. Josh did not because I actually warned him off. And,
and
hooray! And I will talk about that in the what we've been watching section. But Kung Fu Panda 2 is our feature review this week. Plus, we got a little bit of film news, including a brand new trailer for Captain America, which came out on my birthday. How good is that for a birthday present?
That's a pretty good birthday.
We have a brand new list of five, kind of inspired by Cars 2. The list of five this week is the five most disappointing film events. And if you need explanation on that, I've written here, films get hyped, you get excited, and when you finally get to see the film, you are just shattered.
Yeah.
Okay? List five of the best of these events, okay? So, or worst of these events, as the way you want to shape it. Now, we do, before we get on to all of these other stuff, though, we do have a little bit of feedback we'll just cut through really quickly. First one is from our friend James from Melbourne, who says, "Hey, Dave, thanks again for making the podcast every week. Your commitment is truly inspirational, blah, blah, blah. Thank you very much. Always great to have these inspirational ones, okay?" Yeah. He does actually say, though, he started to watch Falling Skies, which is this new Spielberg-produced series, which yeah. I'm very keen on having a look at. Mm-hmm. He says it's not too bad. It has a couple of cliche moments. I'm sure I saw a pregnant chick in the cast. And while the CG isn't the best, I can forgive it. If the show is interesting. Anyway, check it out if you haven't seen it. It actually starts here in Australia on Foxtel next week, I think. So I will be very interested in having a look at that. And he also says he's looking for a documentary. Now, anybody who can help us out with this, we're going to try and help James out as well. If anybody has heard of this documentary, it's called The Shark Is Still Working. And he would like everybody to keep an eye out for this.
Yeah.
He doesn't actually say any more about it. He says he thinks that we will love it and we should keep our eyes open for it. Okay. All right. So we will keep our eyes open for a documentary called The Shark Is Still Working. He says, "Hope your birthday is good for tomorrow and you get lots of cool presents. Nice chocolate cake." And yes, I did have nice chocolate cake. Yep. Thank you. And it wasn't a lie. And we also got an email from our friend Mike from Canada who says, "Hey, Josh, little geek, random guest, phone callers, Delta Knight, chat room, and then Dave." It's getting worse by the week, man.
Oh,
he says, "It's been a long time. Don't worry, Josh. I haven't forgotten about you. I'm still behind on the shows, but I felt compelled to write in because I need help. 10 minutes ago, I was trying to find a movie to watch from my limited collection. Well, my friends don't think it's limited, but compared to Dave, I'm sure it is. Anywho, I was in the mood for an investigative movie."
Really?
You know, the one where the cop or journalist won't give up until they solve the crime.
Yeah.
I love these types of movies, but I'm looking for more. Do you have any suggestions? Thought it could make a good list of five. And I thought, sure, what a great idea. We will do this. This is, we'll take a little bit more work than we had this week, but I thought, yes, a good investigative film is always great. And I think we will do this as a list of five. He says, also, I watched Super 8 and could not stop from smiling.
Yeah.
It was a fun movie. I also managed to watch First Class, and I think one of the more interesting parts of the movie occurred when the lights came on and everyone was trying to explain the family tree of the X-Men. Everyone seemed really pissed off trying to make all the connections, and I got a good chuckle out of it. Keep on doing what you're doing. Jossicles represent. Jossicles represent, I should say. Jossicles, that's even better. All right, so thank you very much, Mike from Canada. Yes, we will consider that list of five, and yes, don't try and look at the family tree of X-Men, because they should have just done a reboot, because it doesn't actually make logical sense when you try and dig into it. And yeah. I agree with you, Super 8 is a fun movie. Keep those feedbacks coming. We love them. We love everything about them, and we love it when you guys get in touch with us. All right.
Yeah.
What we've been watching this week. Josh, what have you been watching before I rip into this thing?
Well, actually, I was thinking about this on the way over here, and reality is very little this week, because this week has been intensely game-centric. I've just been lucky. I've been blessed with a whole bunch of really good games dropped in my lap at the same time. I have played through a game which I can't name yet, because technically I'm not supposed to have it yet, but I've played through and finished
Embargo.
That.
Embargo!
Yeah. On the face. Yes, no. Embargo, unfortunately, for one of those games. I'm playing through Dungeon Siege 3 at the moment. I am playing through Infamous 2 at the moment. I am playing through Shadows of the Damned at the moment. And I have Alice as well.
I want to play Alice. Madness I'm curious returns. About that.
Yeah, very conflicting reviews from people that have already played it. So, yeah, at the moment...
I just picked up my copy of L.A. Noire, man.
I'm interested to see what you think.
I haven't had a chance to play it yet. I've actually been putting it off because I know once I start playing it, I'm going to be putting hours in on this thing. So I've kind of, it's just sitting there waiting for me to start. And I just I haven't had the guts to actually kick into it yet.
Yeah.
But I will get to it very shortly. What I watched this week was I rewatched Transformers 1. Mm. We are seeing Transformers, reviewing Transformers, yeah. I think, next week's show, week after show, I can't remember now, but it's about to open, so we'll be reviewing that soon, and we are going to be seeing Transformers 3 in the next week or so. So I thought I better catch up and rewatch the Transformers movies. I haven't had the guts or the nerve to actually rewatch Transformers 2 yet, but I did rewatch Transformers 1, and I had a fucking blast, man. God, that first film is so much fun, and I got to tell you, I watched it on Blu-ray. It looks fantastic on Blu-ray. The robots and stuff are just amazing to look at. So, yeah, look, go rewatch first Transformers. It's a lot of fun. Transformers 2, that's a whole different issue. I'll let you know what my second opinion on that is when I get around to watching it. I haven't watched it since the cinema.
I've been trying to make you not do it.
I know. Even my son, my 12-year-old boy, is like, Dad, don't do it.
So, and that's why I love you, little geek.
So we will get to it. All right. Transformers 2 Blu-ray, $12, says James from Melbourne. Yes, it's very cheap at the moment, and you can get it in a 2-for-30 deal at JB. So you can pick up something else with it as well. So, yeah, says Joshua, stroking his chin. The other thing I watched this week and was going to be our feature review, funnily enough, but we kicked it at the last second, was Cars 2.
Yeah.
And I just got to say, I'm just going to say this really briefly. We're not going to go into a great big long thing about it, but I got to just tell you that it was the most disappointing film I've seen in a long, long time. And all I walked in the door, looked at my wife, my lovely wife, Katie, and I just said, it's taken 16 years, but Pixar finally made a bad film, you know? And it's like the one thing
every company's got to fall, and you can't hate them for that.
No, and yeah. All I can think is I really, really hope their next film picks up the game again, but this is a sequel that probably shouldn't have happened to what is considered to be their weaker film, and they made a sequel that is slow, uninspired, and worst of all, boring. You know, and it's like, I actually didn't laugh once in the film, and that doesn't mean that there weren't a couple of funny moments. The problem is that the only funny moments, the really funny moments in the film, we saw in the trailer. So we've already seen the funny parts and nothing else in it. What the film is a one joke film. Look how stupid Mater is, stretched over 2 hours. And when I say stretched over 2 hours, it's a long film. It's about 2 hours, something long. And you sit there and go, I found myself twitching and squirming in my seat. And I just sat there going, this is a film that is aimed at, I don't know, 6 or 7 year olds, but 6 or 7 year olds are going to be bored. And in fact, there was actually one review on Rotten Tomatoes I noticed where somebody actually said the little ones were squirming in their seat.
Dude, you see, that's terrible.
You know, and you sit there and go, and if they're going to squirm in their seat, that's a big problem. Now, I got to be very clear on this. I am a huge Pixar fan.
Yeah.
These are people that could do no wrong, they just did wrong.
Yeah.
What is really frustrating is that it actually starts with a short. All Pixar films have a short at the beginning, and the short is a Toy Story short. And it's all the same characters from Toy Story, and it's like a little mini-adventure for the Toy Story people, and even that's uninspired. You know, the whole thing just feels like an afterthought. It feels like we're working on our next film. Let's just pump something out. And it just feels flat. The whole thing feels flat. Now, I actually wrote a review for our future review on the site where I actually said about Kung Fu Panda 2 that I liked the film, but I was a little disappointed with it. And it doesn't hold up to the first one. We'll get more into that in the preview. Which is why I kind of said, well, we'll do Cars 2 then. But Kung Fu Panda 2 is a masterpiece compared to Cars 2. So I will say to you, don't waste your money. This is not a film, and especially taking a large family, you're going to feel hurt that you've had to spend that much money on this film. So Cars 2 is a real disappointment, and part of that is going to be because we have such high expectations of Pixar. But the other part of that is it's just a lazy film. It just feels lazy.
And you know? I never thought I would ever see them being lazy. But there you go.
Yeah. All right, so with that being said, let's move into Kung Fu Panda 2 and actually lift our spirits a little bit. Yeah. Kung Fu Panda 2, directed by Jennifer Yu, who is a first-time director. And I actually noticed I rewatched Kung Fu Panda 1 last night.
Yeah.
And I noticed she's actually a story consultant on Kung Fu Panda 1. So that's where she's come from. So this is her directorial debut. The film is written by Jonathan Abel and Glenn Berger. And it stars the voice talents of Jack Black, Angelina Jolie, Dustin Hoffman, Gary Oldman, Seth Rogen, Lucy Liu, David Cross, Jackie Chan, James Hong, Michelle Yeoh, Danny McBride, and a very unusual small role for Jean-Claude Van Damme.
And who was he?
He was Master Croc in the jail.
Oh, really?
He spoke about one word in the entire film.
I remember, yeah.
And he's sitting there go, it's kind of like when you watch the first Kung Fu Panda 2 and they've got Jackie Chan doing Monkey, and he only speaks like once in the entire thing. And you go, why'd you bother getting Jackie Chan? It's so you can put him in the credits, you know? Yeah. So Jean-Claude Van Damme is Master Croc in the jail. Our synopsis this week comes directly from DreamWorks and says, in Kung Fu Panda 2, Po is now living his dream as the Dragon Warrior, protecting the Valley of Peace alongside his friends and fellow Kung Fu Masters, the Furious Five. But Po's new life of awesomeness is threatened by the emergence of a formidable villain who plans to use a secret unstoppable weapon to conquer China and destroy Kung Fu. Po must look to his past and uncover the secrets of his mysterious origins. Only then will he be able to unlock the strength he needs to succeed. It's actually a pretty good synopsis. I think that pretty much sums up the film. Let's have a look at the trailer for Kung Fu Panda. And I just realized I didn't change anything over. So here we go. Let's change over to film media. Let's change the bug over. There we go. Okay, good. Now we're set for the right show. And let's have a look at Kung Fu Panda.
From the universe?
From a messenger.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Our greatest masters are disappearing. I fear this is the work of Lord Shen, who has unleashed a new kind of threat on our world. This could mean the end of Kung Fu.
But I just got Kung Fu.
And now you must save it. Take the five. It is time for the next phase of your journey.
My fist hungers for justice. That was my fist.
We need to get to that tower without being spotted by those wolves.
Huh? Got it. Stealth mode.
I hate this sneaking around.
Hey.
Huh?
I like it.
How can Kung Fu stop something that stops Kung Fu?
Here we go!
Remember, Dragon Warrior, when you follow the noble path, anything is possible.
I'm freaking in.
Where are the signs?
What signs?
So many signs!
My old enemy stares.
Okay, so that's the trailer for Kung Fu Panda. Josh and I actually disagree a little bit on this film, so it's going to be interesting.
Oh, more than a little bit.
And it's not that I think it's a bad film. I think we've got to make this very clear. I actually enjoyed the film. I enjoyed watching the film. I just don't think the film is quite as solid as the first Kung Fu Panda, and especially considering I've just watched that again, too, so it's very fresh in my mind. The first Kung Fu Panda is a really clever version of the classic hero's journey story, and it's very straightforward telling of that story, and it's... It is actually a laugh riot. I thought my son was going to die last night, and this is a film we've seen before, but he could not stop laughing at certain parts of the first film. The first film is really witty and really amusing. And I didn't find Kung Fu Panda 2 as witty or as funny as the first film. So I just, and in the review I wrote, I basically wrote that it's a good film, but it suffers from what a lot of sequels suffer, which is A, originality, and B, spontaneity, basically. You know, it's
the first one isn't original at all, dude.
No, it's not original in its concept because it's a hero's journey story, but the film itself is still an original, fresh idea. It's the panda, and it's the this, and it's that, you know, and it's the fact that, you know, it's his journey, and it's Jack Black doing what Jack Black... It's original in the sense of what the final product is.
I would say that it's the same as any other Jack Black movie I think I've ever seen in my life.
I think it's actually probably the best Jack Black movie.
No, yeah, and that's fine, but essentially it's not an original concept. And I mean, like, the first one is a great film, but I don't think this one is any worse. Like, I think the journey is, again, I mean, it's a kid's film, but they want to do that kind of kid adult thing, so they're trying to tell some level of a moral inside the storyline. And I know that you felt differently about this, but I thought that was done really well. I do actually think a couple of the just standardized jokes, like the very Jack Black-esque style jokes, do fall a bit flat. But for everything else, especially the action, the kung fu,
I think the action stuff is fantastic.
And that is three quarters of the film. Yeah. I loved Gary Oldman in this film. He was just having an absolute
ball.
He was, and
I had no problem with his voice work at all. The problem I had was the fundamental character that he was playing. Because if you watch the first film, the Ian McShane character is so evil and such a menace that it gives the panda something really heavy to go up against. And I kind of felt all the way through it that the Gary Oldman's character, Shen, was kind of like a petulant teenager, and it was never clear
this is the thing. It's the standardized kind of old storyline that they're going for, the same sort of thing. I mean, it's not the hero's journey, but at the same time it kind of is. It's sort of... I loved him as a character because in Kung Fu Panda 2, he has all this martial arts ability, but he's still hindered by the same problems he's always had. He's still overweight. He's still not that great at walking, but it's cute because now it's coming back in kind of he is the badass, but then there's all these situations like the stairs where it takes him like 2 hours to get up the top and someone's carrying him on the top.
And I gotta say, one of my favorite moments in the entire film, and look, minor spoilers, doesn't spoil the plot, but one of my favorite moments is that cliche where the hero suddenly shows up and makes his big declaration.
Yeah. And he's on the roof. And he's too far away for them to hear.
It's like you see him stand up and start to talk, and then we cut back to them, and he's literally blocks away. And he's just going,
But this is one of the reasons why I really like Gary Oldman's character, because Gary Oldman's character is the standard unfulfilled person, right? And he hasn't grown up since being a teenager because he's still looking for... He's still looking to either better his parents because he could never get them as a love situation. Yeah. He could never get, you know, sort of with them or connecting with them. So instead, he's trying to fulfill by beating them and creating himself as a more powerful person. And he's not evil. He's misunderstood. The point where we're allowed, moral-wise, to actually have him disappear or die or whatever you want to call that is the moment that he chooses... after all is said and done, to still go after that.
Yeah.
And that's the point where you can actually say that you hate him. But look, I thought he was a fantastic character. I loved the fact that he just had this belief that he was going to win no matter what. And Panda was just like... The thing that I loved about sort of Jack Black's character against Gary Oldman's character was that he's kind of... One search—it's that whole Darth Vader Yoda thing going on, where it's like one searching for inner peace, the other searching for sort of outer peace, and it's sort of—it's just funny because every time they run into each other, he's just so calm and relaxed, and Gary Oldman's character just wigs out every time he's around, and I think it's fantastic. Even the bits where he's like trying to plan what he's going to say when he comes up the stairs, I just thought it was hilarious, and Gary Oldman was just doing an amazingly cool job. I loved the look of Shin's character.
Oh, the peacock,
how he had
the peacock,
those really
and the metal
bulbous
casings
eyes.
On his feet.
Exactly. He was hilarious. And
I will say that about this one. The design, animation,
yeah.
and score, and 3D was stunning.
It's not your standard. What I actually liked about it is it doesn't pander like a lot of the kids' films does. A lot of the jokes and humor are more in the character development and in the people. They're not that standard kind of humor where it's just, you know, people being punched in the face or whatever. There's plenty of that in there. But there's a lot of jokes which are just jokes that you can get if you know what people are like.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I absolutely adored this film, and I don't care what anybody says.
I do like the fact that they gave the Furious Five more to do this time.
Exactly.
I think that the character building stuff between him and Tigress, that conversation on the deck of the ship where they're talking about being a hard ass and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Not hard ass. What's the word?
Hardcore.
Hardcore. That's
you
what
can't use hard ass.
No, that's right. When she says, you know, when he says that's really hardcore.
Yeah.
And that, of course, comes back later in the film, which is, those are really nice moments. And I love, I've always been a huge fan of James Hong, who plays his father, the Goose.
Oh, yeah.
Who I just adore, and he is fabulous in this film as well.
Yeah.
So look, the film has many, many great things going for it.
Yeah.
I when I walked out of there, one of the things that Kung Fu Panda 1 had was it was one of those classic films that we talk about all the time, which is it appeals to any age.
Mm.
And you walk into it and you go, this is just glorious. And it doesn't matter who you are, what age you are, you'll get something out of this film. Mm. Kung Fu Panda 2, for me, and it's in the screening I saw, felt like it was just aimed at a little bit younger. And it felt like it was aimed, it's the sort of film where you go, the 12-year-olds are going to absolutely flip on this film. The adults will enjoy it, but it doesn't have quite the same universal
appeal. I felt the narrative reached out to me. So
that worked for you. That's good.
Yeah, no, it really did. Like, I was tearing up, dude, when the kid's being left in the basket and they're taking off. It's just, that is harrowingly beautiful stuff to translate into a cartoon thing and still have the impact and the effect when that kid has no idea what is about to happen to his life, and he's just happy and comfortable, and I was just sitting there going,
I love the animated moments in the film, the 2D.
I thought that was fantastic.
I thought they were really well handled. There's some really good stuff in it. And as I say, I do recommend it. It's a great film. I do really like it. I just don't think it's as good as the first one.
But that's the thing that it's weird because it's like you say it like that, but you feel like on the edge of everything you say, there's like you have something against this film.
The problem I had with the film was I actually didn't like its structure. And I know the structure didn't bother you, but I actually had a problem with this film, and one of the reasons why I say I feel like it's aimed at a slightly younger audience is because the structure of this film really felt like 20 minutes of action, Let's learn a life lesson and put a moral in here. 20 minutes of action, let's put a life lesson and a moral in here.
You're the same guy that likes Lord of the Rings, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
With the 20 minutes of action and then a pause and then the 20...
I don't mind a pause in the action. What I don't like is every time we do pause, it's like, what can we learn in this point? It feels almost like a He-Man cartoon where we say, what we learned this week was...
Well, that's almost like the essence of kind of the Asian style cinema. That's the storytelling moments.
But it's not the essence of Western cinema, which is what this film is aimed at.
But that's just like, that's pigeonholing it into, because it's a Western made film, it has to act and be like a Western sensibility. I disagree with that.
I will own this film and I will watch it again probably many times because I do like it. I think the film is a lot of fun. I just think it doesn't have the same, I don't think the film has the same universal appeal or the same freshness or the same humor that the first does. And that's what it really comes down to, is I think it suffers a little bit from sequelitis, which is we don't have something as fresh to talk about now, so we have to kind of work within the bounds that we have. And that's a problem with a lot of sequels. You have to work really hard with a sequel to make it as fresh as the original. And but, you know, the world is actually in disagreement with me, because I think it's about 82% on Rotten Tomatoes.
84%.
And a lot of people who love this film, and that's fine. And I understand that, but I know that I saw it with somebody else. There's a couple of other bloggers at the screening, and we all kind of felt the same way. We all kind of came out and just kind of felt like it didn't quite satisfy the way we wanted it to satisfy, or the way we expected it, like the first film, to satisfy us. It didn't quite satisfy. It's like if you're really thirsty and you have a big long drink. The drink is really nice, but it may not have quenched your thirst.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And it didn't quite quench the thirst.
I would actually say that I enjoyed this one as much, if not more, than the original.
That's good. That's good. That's excellent, in fact. That's a high praise indeed.
Absolutely. And I stick by it. I think that this movie just sat perfectly with me. And just everybody that was playing their role just absolutely worked for me. I mean, like, it would, like you said, it's really nice to see the cast members from the original actually get a bit more sort of presence, creating a bit deeper characters, which I thought really worked.
I love the new addition, though. I love the soothsayer.
Yeah.
Played by, voiced by Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah.
The hungry goat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Trying to keep eating Shen's clothing.
She's
a wonderful character, and I had a lot of fun watching her.
So. Yeah. I think Jack Black didn't feel like Jack Black in this film, which was the difference for me. Like, in the first one, the only real problem that I had with Kung Fu Panda 1 was you can paint it any way you want. I was still looking at Jack Black. Mm. Like, that was my problem with it. It was like, it was a cute, great film, and it was really exciting and all this sort of stuff, but I never he never became Poe for me. He was always Jack Black, because the jokes were Jack Black jokes. Right. You know what I mean? Whereas this one, the few jokes he does tell just fall completely flat, and it's actually the humor around him that makes it really work. Like, him as a character grows as opposed to it being Jack Black like it was in the first one, and that's probably one of the reasons that I really attached to it. I was just like, it's really nice to see this expand into something more than just another Jack Black story.
Well, that's fair. Again, that's fair.
Yeah.
And as we've always said on this show, everybody's opinion is valid. The film is a completely subjective thing, and everybody will get something out of it, they want to get out of it. I look at it and I say that I would recommend this film to people. I think it is a good time out. I think if you've got kids in particular, they're going to love this film. Mm. The action, just from a plain, straightforward martial arts film, fantastic. Just like the first one. The martial arts is so well animated. Yeah. So well handled. And that sequence where they're running up the outside of that building that's falling, you see it in the trailer, is awe-inspiring. You know?
My other favorite bit, and again, it doesn't wreck anything, but the final fight where he is tossing around fireballs, and I won't say why or what, that scene, I was just waiting for a Hadouken. Like, I just every time he, like, threw one out, I was just like, oh, come on, just say it, please.
He wouldn't say Hadouken, though. He'd say, skadoosh. Like in the first film. I love Skadoosh. I would recommend it to people. I think it's a great film. I think for me personally, I would say don't expect Kung Fu Panda 1. It's a slightly different feel to Kung Fu Panda 1, but that doesn't necessarily make it bad. It's just, it's a different feel. And I think you rate it.
I rate it incredibly highly. I think it's the kind of, in fact, I mean, action wise and you know, sort of power wise, I just feel like it almost has a little bit more for people my age, because I just look at it and I'm like, there is so much action and fun and, like, seriously cool stuff going on. You'd have to be...
And I think it's really interesting this year, because when Kung Fu Panda 1 came out, and you got to think, look at the strength of DreamWorks at the moment. DreamWorks, I mean, forget their earlier stuff. Let's just start from Kung Fu Panda. Kung Fu Panda followed by How to Train Your Dragon, followed by Megamind. I mean, they've just gone from strength to strength to strength at this point, right?
Oh, yeah.
When I saw Kung Fu Panda 1... Wall-E hadn't come out yet. And I remember sitting there in Kung Fu Panda 1, I turned to my lovely wife, Katie, at the end of the film, and I just went, oh my God, I think we've got a company that finally out-Pixar'd Pixar. Mm. And then Wall-E came out and basically blew Kung Fu Panda out of the water, technically, right?
Yeah.
This year, I think we can honestly say that Kung Fu Panda 2 out-Pixar'd Pixar, because Cars 2 is a poor effort. Cars 2 is on the same level as Shark's Tale.
Yeah.
So if it gives you any idea, that's kind of the level it's at. All right, yeah. Animation wise, yes, the rendering and stuff is beautiful. There's no argument. Pixar knows how to actually animate and render. You know, their texture mapping, their 3D, all that stuff is fine. There's just no film wrapped up in it, so it's a bit of a problem. All right, so that's Kung Fu Panda 2. Go out and see it. It is well worth having a look at, and I can't wait till it comes out in Blu-ray. I'll have a look at it again, and do go see it in 3D. The 3D is magnificent. It is just glorious. We're going to take a break here, and this is a very unusual thing for us to do. Before we get into entertainment news,
what are you doing, Dave?
It's kind of related to entertainment news, but
you're a liar. I can tell.
It's kind of related to entertainment news, but we have to play this because I saw this yesterday and it made me laugh out loud, and I thought I've got to share this with our viewers. Weird Al Yankovic does parody songs, as we know. We all know who Weird Al Yankovic is. He's been in films. He is very much a part of Hollywood infrastructure.
Mm.
Now, Weird Al has a particular policy. When you do parody, you don't have to get permission to do parody. Parody is covered by fair use. But Weird Al has made an admission in his life that he never parodies anybody without getting permission. And he even got permission from Michael Jackson all those times that he did that and, you know, everything else, right? So he contacted Lady Gaga and said, I want to do one of your songs. And he was given permission, wrote the song, recorded it, and then received notification that he wasn't allowed to use it, or they didn't want to be associated with it. And he was very bummed out by this, and so removed it from his new album. Then got notification later from Lady Gaga herself, who basically said, I knew nothing about this. After it hit the press and everybody talked about this, she goes, I knew nothing about this. This was all dumped through my representatives and so forth. Of course you have permission.
Yes.
And
respect to her for that.
It is now back on the album. And yesterday, the video went live. And I thought, we have to share this video because it was a quality piece of video work. Now, for our audio listeners, you're not getting the best part of this joke, so follow the link. It's a really awkward one because it's a special kind
of... That's the link in the show notes, right?
Link in the show notes, which you'll find on when this episode is posted. It's a really awkward one because it's a special kind of YouTube link. It doesn't work on mobile devices, and if you search for it on an Apple TV, you can't find it. So it's really, you have to follow the link exactly to actually get there. It's kind of a bizarre thing. But I've managed to capture it, and we're going to play it here for your viewing pleasure. Here is the complete Perform This Way by Weird Al Yankovic.
My mama told me when I was hatched, act like a superstar. Save your allowance, buy a bubble dress, and someday you will go far. Now on red carpets, well, I'm hard to miss. The press follows everywhere I go. I'll poke your eye out with a dress like this. Back off and enjoy the show. I'm sure my critics will say it's a grotesque display. Well, they can bite me, baby, I perform this way. I might be wearing Swiss cheese or maybe covered with bees. It doesn't mean I'm crazy, I perform this way. Perform this way. Ooh, my little monster's pain. Life's cause I perform this way. Baby, I perform this way. Perform this way. Ooh, don't worry, I'm okay. Hey, I just perform this way. A troll or evil queen, I'll be a human jelly bean, cause every day is Halloween. I'm so completely original, my new look is all the rage. I'll wrap my small intestines round my neck and set fire to myself on stage. I'll wear a porcupine on my head on a W-H-I-L. Offended when you see my latest pop monstrosity. I'm strange, weird, shocking, odd, bizarre. I'm Frankenstein, I'm Avatar. There's nothing too embarrassing. I'll honestly do anything but wear white after Labor Day. Cause baby, I perform this way.
Hope you won't think it's cliche if I go nude today. Don't call the cops now, baby, I perform this way. No reason I should regret all the attention I get. I'm not completely crazy, I perform this way, yeah.
All right, there you go. There's a taste of Weird Al for this lovely Saturday afternoon. I just find that video clip vaguely disturbing, the fact that the head bobbles like a
that's the only thing you found disturbing about that, man. I think you've got problems.
I love the fact that they bring Madonna in, because as you were saying, the original Born This Way is such a ripoff of Respect Yourself.
Yeah, and that's why I don't get it. And like, I don't want to get into that because it's a musical part of me and this is not related to this at all. But Gaga's song really confuses me, because it's like, the song's called Born This Way, and it's her talking about that's just the way she is. Yet at the same time, she knows. It's the same song. So how do you make that song and say I'm born this way and yet also be totally ripping off Madonna in every way and thing? You're either incredibly...
How does she do it? She's Gaga.
Ah, dude.
I'm not a big Gaga fan, so to see her skewered like that, I'm actually quite happy. Yeah. I think Weird Al just skewered Gaga, quite frankly. I think really summed her up. But his new album is coming out. I think it's out in the next couple of months. I'll be there to buy it. I love Weird
Al.
It's
out now.
Is it out now? Did it come out? Oh,
I think so, because one of the guys brought it up and showed me. So.
Ooh, I've got $30 iTunes credit. I might go buy it. I gotta buy it. I love Weird Al. I've got every one of his albums. He makes me laugh. I love him. All right, let's get on to entertainment news. And dude, sat down yesterday morning. As you know, it was my birthday yesterday. I sat down to do the show notes. I open up my RSS feed, and what's the first thing I find? Captain America gets a new trailer.
And isn't it awesome?
And it's awesome. And all I can say is, what a birthday present. Not only did it get a new trailer, it got a new poster, which is also kind of cool. It's just his face with the shield, and he's holding it. You can go to geekactually.com. You can see all of that. The show notes have our link. But I thought we would play that Captain America trailer here for our viewers and our listeners. So here's the new Captain America trailer. What I love about it is it actually gets a little bit more into the story. The background of Steve Rogers. So here we go.
I know this neighborhood.
I got beat up in that alley.
You just don't know when to give up.
I could do this all day.
Do you have something against running away?
You start running, they'll never let you stop.
You're really gonna do this now?
There are men laying down their lives. I got no right to do any less than them.
I can offer you a chance.
Our goal is to create a new breed. Super soldier.
When you brought a 90-pound asthmatic onto my army base, I let it slide.
I am looking for qualities beyond the physical.
You win wars with guts.
Grenade! Everybody down!
Is this a test?
He's still skinny.
Whatever happens, stay who you are.
Not just a soldier, but a good man.
Is it too late to go to the bathroom?
Actually did it.
Who the hell are you?
The first of many.
Hydra is the Nazi deep science division, led by Johann Schmidt.
He thinks he's a god, and he's willing to blow up half the world to prove it.
You're not even close to this technology.
I asked for an army, and all I got was you.
Congratulations. You just got promoted.
Mr. Stark?
I had some ideas about the uniform.
You're gonna get so many girls.
Captain, we are much alike.
I don't know if I can do this.
You won't be alone.
What made you so special?
Nothing. I'm just a kid from Brooklyn.
Hey!
You're late.
Nobody's perfect.
I love that line, heroes are made in America. I think that is so cool. Look, this film is either going to stink rotten or it's going to be fucking awesome. One of the two. I think it
film is going to be amazing.
I think it's it walks a very fine line to being absolute camp cheese. But
it's
I can't
be
wait.
Fantastic.
I can't wait.
Shut up. It's going to be great.
All right. There's finally some news about the adaptation of Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Do you remember this humorous book that came out not long ago? Looks like Emma Stone may be in talks to actually play the Jane Austen character and kill zombies. So that could be kind of fun.
Yeah.
I love Emma Stone.
Yeah, but she's already done zombies.
Yeah, that's why she's a good zombie killer.
No, that doesn't make her a good zombie killer.
It actually says that they finally got a director for this thing attached. Who is, give me a second, I will tell you, Craig Gillespie.
Yeah.
It's already gone through the hands of David O. Russell, Mike White, and now we finally got Craig Gillespie.
Yeah.
The early candidates for this have been Natalie Portman, Mia Wasikowska, Anne Hathaway, and now it looks like Emma Stone is finally going to, looks like it might finally go ahead, this thing. I'm actually looking forward to it. It's a funny idea, and I think it's it could be a really humorous film if they pull it off right. So we'll wait and see about that. This is kind of a trailer-heavy show, guys. This is a big week for trailers. We'll run through these very quickly. We've got one piece of news in the middle just to help break it up a little bit, okay? But first of all, over the last few weeks, we've talked about the parody trailers for The Muppets.
Yeah.
First they did the rom-com, then they did the Wolf Pack, they did the whole Hangover 2 thing. Then they did that one last week, which was the Green Lantern. And this week they finally released the trailer.
Yeah.
So now we finally get to see what The Muppets is about. All right, so we finally actually get to see a proper trailer for The Muppets. So here they are, the triumphant return of The Muppets.
Yeah.
We're trying to get the old gang back together again.
We haven't done this in a long time.
Your fans never left you. The world hasn't forgotten.
Sure, it's impossible, but we've got to try. It's time to play the music.
It's time to light the lights.
It's time to meet the Muppets.
Yes! Come on, guys, let's go!
Wow, I can't believe we're all back together.
Yeah!
Sorry, I was super excited.
The Muppets have always been about artistic integrity, not cheap tricks.
Check it out. Fart shoes!
This is going to be a really short movie.
Oh, look, what's that over there?
A what?
Ow. Ow.
Throw me over.
I think that's an electric fence.
God damn it!
It's an electric fence.
Yep.
Maybe you don't need the whole world to love you, you know? Maybe you just need one person.
Oh, Kermit. Kermit, Kermit, Kermit!
And I don't care what anybody says. I believe in you. And you.
Phenomena. Phenomena.
You think we should have rented a bigger car?
There's no movie like a Muppet movie. Jason Segel, Amy Adams, Kermit the Frog, and Miss Piggy.
Ow, that hurt!
The Muppets.
I am so freaking in.
I don't even need that movie to be good. It'll just be nice to see Muppets back on
Zed
screen.
Zed in our chat room has said, all the fans are 25 to 40-year-olds and can't wait to see the massive parody again. Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
There's no doubt in our minds.
I loved the Muppets when I was a kid. I loved the late-night Muppets that they had on.
Yeah, the late-night
show that they made for ages, which was just brilliant because it was just the same characters, but an adult version of what I was already watching. And this is going to sit somewhere in between those. And as long as I get that, I will be happy.
And I love the Muppet movies. I love all of the Muppet movies.
Yeah.
I don't think there's one that actually fell truly flat, you know?
It's got the true essence of what is comedy. So it's very difficult to mess that up.
Yeah, there's some funny moments in that trailer. And I love the fact that they've recreated the original Muppet Theater from the Muppet Show. And it's got all the characters back. I actually really looking forward to this film. I believe it opens in August.
Yeah.
I will be there with bells on. Absolutely. If you don't like the Muppets, you're dead inside, is all I can say. what's our chat room saying about the Muppets at this point? Go see the live shows. They are great and for adults. What live shows? Live shows. When? Where? Who? Why? Get me in there. Muppets Rock. And as you pointed out, very quickly in that trailer, you saw Chris Cooper?
Yeah.
Rock on!
I think the cast is going to be amazing. Because there are very few actors that you could go to and be like, hey, we're doing a Muppets movie. Do you want in? You'd be like, fuck yeah.
Absolutely. Why wouldn't I be? And that was one of the strengths of the Muppet show and the Muppet movies, was always getting all those cameos.
Well, and the great thing about it was that no one ever got portrayed the wrong way in that, because they were just playing themselves, and that was the great thing. It was just nice to get up on stage, and with the Muppets, the characters were always just real fun, like whoever they were. And the Muppets can get anyone. You notice that?
Yeah,
they would get the most influential people they possibly
could. Who can
could.
Forget the very famous Alice Cooper appearance on The Muppet Show doing Welcome to My Nightmare with all the Muppets in coffins? It was fantastic. All right. Delta says, I love it when Wally was driving the car.
Yeah, I don't know what that
was. There was a robot driving the car in that Menomino scene. Yeah. I don't think it was Wally. All right. I want to make this very clear.
Yeah,
Superman the Man of Steel is not an origin story. Right?
Who are you kidding anymore?
It's not an origin story, but apparently Julia Ormond has now been approached to play Lara. That would be Kal-El's mother on Krypton. So that, and she would be the wife of Russell Crowe, who would be playing Jor-El.
Right. And we've got a Pyre and Ma Kent.
And Pyre and Ma Kent, but this is not an origin story.
It's definitely not an origin story.
They said it's not an origin story.
Right.
Superman the Man of Steel. Train wreck waiting to happen.
I can't wait to see this movie. When are we going to get some trailers?
I don't know.
I want to see some trailers of some footage that isn't what I know this film's going
to
be.
According to Deadline, which is The Hollywood Reporter, it says Warner Brothers and Zack Snyder are in talks with Julia Ormond to play Superman's Kryptonian mother, Lor-Van, in The Man of Steel. I expect the deal to be made shortly. Russell Crowe has been offered a role of Jor-El, father of Superman, played by Henry Cavill. Kevin Costner and Diane Lane are previously set to play Clark Kent's earthbound parents. This comes after Ormond completed her role as blah, 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 blah. And all I can think is everything that I just read there says origin story.
Do you reckon this is all just a side thing? Like, maybe this is going to be like 5 minutes worth of footage, but they're trying to get people to focus on this so they can bring it out in secret?
Is Zack Snyder that clever? No, but Christopher Nolan is.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, maybe this is all just a play on things, and they're just trying to push that so that everybody gets lost in the fact that this is obviously going to be an origin story.
What's it called when you do a film and you make them look one way and you're actually...
Misdirection.
Misdirection. So you think it's misdirection.
Oh, man, if anyone can pull off misdirection, it's Christopher Nolan, dude.
That's an interesting notion.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Oh, yes. Now, actually, Delta Knights brought up says, now Muppet Babies were strange. I was actually never a fan of Muppet Babies.
I don't know what that is.
That's where they...
I don't know.
You don't
what,
care.
I don't know what that is. Let's move on.
All right, moving right along then, and just say that Conan the Barbarian is close at hand. And I talked to you about this earlier in the week, Josh, when I said that the new Red Band trailer for Conan the Barbarian surfaced this week. And I actually wrote this up in the article when I posted it on the site. And hear me out on this when I said that I should be excited about this film. I'm a huge Game of Thrones fan.
Mm.
And Jason Momoa is fantastic in Game of Thrones, playing essentially Conan.
Yeah.
So we really have seen what he's going to be like as Conan. So, and that part's good. Okay. Mm. It's Conan, for God's sake. Love the comic books. Love the books. Love the original 82 John Milius film.
Yeah.
Love Conan, right? Sword and Sorcery's R-rated, violent, blood, guts, veins between the teeth, you know.
Yeah.
I love Conan, right? Why am I not excited about this film?
I don't know. Run the trailer. We'll talk about it afterwards.
All right, this is the new Red Band trailer for Conan the Barbarian, and this should have me excited.
My master said I would meet you. He said our paths would merge.
Do you have a name?
Tamara Amaliat Jorvi Karushan. And yours?
Conan.
That's it?
How many names do I need?
When a Sumerian feels thirst, it is the thirst for blood. When he feels cold, it is the cold edge of steel. Gotcha! Yes! Who are you? Run from me, and I will tear apart the monster to find you. I will follow you to hell. Catch! Not bad.
I think he likes you.
Oh,
Scorpio's thirst, it is a thirst for blood.
For me, it's the soundtrack that kills it. I was in until the cock rock started playing. Well, not even that. It's like metal cock rock. It's like metal fused.
A cross between Clash of the Titans and Scorpion
King.
Don't
say that. That's so mean.
That's what I'm getting from it, though.
No, I'm not getting that at all. Look, it looks to have some...
Look, Clash all I can say, the one that I forgot to say in our roundup before we started this was, they are also going for a hard R. That should also excite me. You know?
That's the bit that I'm holding on to. This doesn't have, like, it feels a lot more violent. Also, I want to know, what's with chucking swords to each other?
I think it's the cool factor. Because remember, it's in 3D. It's the whole...
Man, really? Now you see, that worries me. That worries me more than that, than the rest of that trailer does. Look, I'm going to go see that. And I have... No, I don't have any expectations for this film. I'm going to leave it out of it. I'm not making an opinion on this. I'm just going to go watch it, and then I have nothing to
lose. We're definitely reviewing
this
for the show.
Absolutely.
We're definitely reviewing for the... Look, I just look at it and go, you're right. The cock rock in it just kills it for me.
Yeah.
I have a real problem when they do period films and put hard rock soundtracks behind them, and you sit there and look at it and just go, that doesn't work at
James
all.
From Melbourne says, expect to lose your $28.
Yeah, that's why I go see it at the Ritz, dude. It's a lot cheaper.
Yep.
Go to
the Ritz.
What company is it? Can we get a media screening to this? What company is this? Can we get a media? I want media passes.
Yeah.
The chat room went kind of ballistic during all that with Game of Thrones stuff. And all I'm going to say is that I finished watching season one of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm. I cannot wait for next year. Mm. And I got to say, I know Josh hasn't really grabbed you at this point.
I haven't just got into it.
You've got to sit down and watch it. It is great television. Yeah, and if you've only watched a couple of episodes, keep with it, because it is just tough stuff.
Yeah.
You know, this is tough love, man. And it is, I put it up there, I think it is actually one of the finest TV series since Deadwood and Rome.
No, okay.
All right,
I'll check it out.
It is really, really good stuff, and I cannot wait. And I love the fact that each series, the 10 episodes, is one book.
Mm.
So this was the first book of the series by J.R.R. Martin, and next season will be the second book, and so forth. So, and it's already been picked up for a second season. We know it's coming back. This did not disappoint in any way for me. I just loved it. So, and I'm not going to spoil anything. So what we'll do is we'll wait until after it's had its Australian run, and then we might go into a really in-depth on it to really talk about it. But do watch Game of Thrones. Well worth having a look at. And yes, HC Widget says HBO sure knows how to put much good stuffs on. Yes, absolutely. Mm. Damn straight. All right, we're going to move on to a list of five.
Mm-hmm.
Things as there's nothing more to talk about with Conan. Yep. It's just Conan. What can I tell
you? It's just Conan. We don't know what it's going to be.
At this point, it's
yet.
Just Conan. Now, our list of five this week is inspired by Cars 2, where we say five most disappointing film events. Films get hyped, you get excited, and then when you finally get to see them, the films, you are just shattered. List five of them. Now, my list is going to be controversial, because there's a couple of films on there that I know you actually really like. So I'm going to make this very clear straight off the bat. My list is based on the actual event of going to see it for the first time.
Right.
Some of these films I have revisited. Some of these films I have actually grown to accept, if not love completely. But it's that initial event, that moment where you've built it up, and it's coming, and then you see it, and you just go, what the fuck was that? If you get my idea.
Yes.
Okay? So that's where my list is coming from. I don't know where your list is coming from.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to start us off because I think some of my choices are going to be very interesting for you. And I have some honorary mentions as well, because this was actually, I have a long and glorious list of films like this. So I will bring up a couple. My first one was, I don't think it's an argument from anybody though, which is Escape from L.A.
Aww.
Now, I love Escape from New York. Mm-hmm. I absolutely adored Escape from New York. I own it. I've seen it a million times. And when I heard they were finally doing a sequel all those years later, Kurt Russell was back, John Carpenter was back, the trailers were looking good, I just went, I cannot wait for this film. Cannot wait. And from the very first frame of that film, I went, what the fuck am I watching? And it was atrocious. Hated it. And to this day, I actually still hate it. And funnily enough, I own a copy because it's John Carpenter, and I own all of John Carpenter's films, but I can't stand the film. So there was my first one.
All right.
Your first one.
My first one is The Ring 2.
Ah.
We're talking about the English one. I am one of the people that advocates that The Ring was a much better film when it was redone.
Yeah,
by,
I agree. No, I agree. Verbinski. Yeah. I actually never saw Ring 2. Yeah. I love Ring 1, though.
Yeah, and Ring 1 was a really well-made film. It took it to a lot darker place. It spent a lot more time on atmosphere, which was not something the Asian version did. It was creepy as all shit. It had a higher budget, so you had a much more effective use of the special effects that they created,
or
ones that they took from the original thing. And I was so excited, and then I watched the second one, and it's just a mess. It's just like it kind of explains itself but doesn't explain itself, and it's kind of scary, but it's mainly well lit for most of it. And it kind of explains things, but you're like, you know, I liked it better when it wasn't explained, so it kind of tainted the original film for me, and I just walked out of that, and I was like, oh, man.
And all I can say is thank God it wasn't Gore Verbinski. We can't blame him for the
sequel, so. And yeah, no, it's just, it was unfortunate, because it was during that period of time where they all started to bomb, like, the grudges started to get worse, and this concept of taking the Asian cinema experience and kind of trying to rework it and create...
What do we have? We had Pulse, The Grudge, Dark Water.
There's
so many
of them
that were remade.
Exactly, and it was at that first period where they all started to suck.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just unfortunate.
And not only suck, but milked dry. I mean, The Grudge had 3 sequels or something like that.
Yeah. Done those.
Just very quickly, back to Game of Thrones conversation. H.C. would just say, I need to see Camelot. Thanks for the info. I really wasn't sure if I wanted to risk it. Camelot is a funny one. Camelot came out first. Yeah. I've watched all of Camelot as well. I actually really liked the first episode, and I thought this is a really interesting spin on the new on Camelot and all this sort of stuff. And then Game of Thrones came out, and Game of Thrones, quite frankly, makes Camelot look like crap.
Mm.
All right. So, and I was kind of shaded by Game of Thrones for the rest of the series. Camelot feels really weak storytelling next to Game of Thrones.
Anyway. H.C. Widget, I just want to retort for a minute, man, because I think that's a really unfair statement. And I've got to explain this because I'm sick of people
Let's
being...
get the statement first.
Yeah, yeah. So... The statement is that if you want to watch Asian-style films, watch Asian films. No, man, and you know me. I am that kind of a person. I would rather watch the original. But we are talking about a period of time where they actually took... This was where the concept of remakes and reworkings really worked. You had Sam Raimi bring the director and give him The Grudge and go do it with a bigger budget and more to do with and more to play with. It's like we aren't talking about the same sort of a situation here. Like this isn't the same thing where you take a film that is genuinely overseas one and just do a Western version of it. You're talking about a collaboration. And this is what we've done. This is what the original Matrix concept was. It was taking the idea of what was kind of anime and stuff
also,
like that.
Also, in the case of The Ring, the American remake of The Ring, and this is controversial to say this, but Josh and I both agree, is better than the original film, better than the original Asian film.
Yeah.
It's a scarier film. It's a better made film than the original Ring. Verbinski outdid himself on remaking that film.
Yeah, so. And if you ask most people that have seen both films, especially if you watch them close together, everyone will agree. It's like, look, realistically, it's that whole thing of kind of Evil Dead versus Evil Dead 2. I mean, neither of them are bad films, but when he got a bit more money behind it, he could make it a better looking film. Mm. He could make it a more collaborated, more perfect kind of a feel. And this is all that.
And Evil Dead 2 is essentially just a remake of Evil Dead 1. Yeah. You know,
I mean, like, and this is the thing. You have to remember when you watch the original Ring, it's on a low budget, and there are a lot of things that they could have done better.
And it was interesting and it was scary and so forth when it first came out.
Yeah.
But it was one of those situations where the American, the Verbinski version just did it better. So.
Yeah, and H.C. Widget just says, when it works great when it works. And that's what I mean. When we got to that point, that was the first time I had seen it not work. And I was so excited for this concept of cinema at the time, which was kind of bringing the two cultures together as opposed to trying to create a different version of the same thing. And I thought it was a really positive step forward for film. And that was why The Ring 2 hurt me so much, because I was just like, and there it goes.
Yeah, pretty much.
And we just lost it. And it was like the finger finally slipped off the pulse, and they didn't have it anymore. And from then on, it just became a nightmare.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go back to our list and say my number 4 is going to be the controversial one, and you're going to think this is very, very odd, but I've got to explain the story, okay? The film is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Oh, this isn't the first time I've heard
this. No, you've heard this before. It's just for those who haven't heard the story, though. I am a huge Spielberg fan, and I'm, we all know that. I'm a massive Spielberg fan, especially from that era of film. I'm a huge Indiana Jones fan and so forth. And a friend and myself were both enormously excited about Indiana Jones The Last Crusade, the idea of Sean Connery coming into the cast and all sorts of stuff. We went to see it together, and we actually hated Last Crusade. We were in a definite minority. Everybody seemed to love this film. But I just felt they completely ripped the heart out of Indiana Jones with that film. Now, over the years, I've softened on it, and I actually have watched it many times, and my son really enjoys it. And I can see what people like in it and so forth. But as a first-time cinema experience, I remember walking out of that movie, and my lovely wife, Katie, who we weren't together at the time, but we knew each other very well, she was going into the next session as we were coming out. She saw us and she just looked at my face, and she knew me so well, she looked at my face and goes, "You're really disappointed, aren't you?" And I went, "That's an understatement." And we were just shattered by this film. I thought the special effects were substandard. I thought the humor was stupid. They took beloved characters like Marcus and so forth and turned them into comic relief. I just hated everything that they did to that film and was so upset by what they did to that film. As I say, over the years, I've softened and so forth. But as a first-time going experience, I really disliked Last Crusade. In fact, I would actually say as a first-time going experience, and this is where it gets really weird, I think I was more disappointed by Last Crusade than I was Kingdom of Crystal Skulls.
Wow.
Because Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls, I didn't expect that much.
Yeah.
You know? Because we thought it's been so many years and it's going to...
Still.
You know? But I was, as that event going in of being disappointed...
Yeah.
I had higher anticipation for Last Crusade than I did for Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls.
Wonderful.
So, anyway, there you go. There's my number four. And that's kind of what this list is going for with me, is that first time event. And you're going to love my number one.
Oh,
all right, you're number four, Josh.
All right, well, my number four is a film that you saw with me, actually, which was Nightmare on Elm Street, the remake.
Oh, yes.
And it just nailed it home, I think, was the reason it was just the most disappointing experience for me. It was just... It was a realization that we just couldn't do this right. Like, we were just never going to get it right. We had to stop trying to do remakes and just try and find something original. Even if it's just a new original horror icon and then just follow the same template, we've got to get off this.
I also agree with you. It's also disappointing because we had such high hopes for Jackie Earle Haley.
Yeah.
You know, we had high hopes for that film. We had high hopes that they would actually pull this off.
Exactly. And, like, I didn't like the direction they went with it, with him kind of like, "I'm not a child molester, but I am, but now I'm not, but I am." And I'm just like, you lost me and I don't care. And it's like, the thing that made it so incredibly painful was when you saw scenes that did work. That scene where she was in the... convenience store, and it keeps flicking in and out of the room as she slowly like passes out in the room. That was a fantastic scene, and then the rest of it's shit. And it's like, when you completely fuck it up, you can just hate a film and forget it. But when a film did a few things right, it's even more painful because you're just like, with just a little bit more love, you could have done something with that. So, that's my number four.
Okay. My number three is Starship Troopers.
Yeah.
I actually, over the years, once again, I've softened on this film, and I actually found out the best way to watch Starship Troopers over the years. If you watch it on DVD, put on the German soundtrack. Put on the German soundtrack and put on the English subtitles. That film is funnier in German. It actually works in German because of all the uniforms and everything else. Yeah. It is hysterical. Anyway, that's getting off the track. I loved RoboCop. I was a big Paul Verhoeven fan, and I am a huge fan of the book, Starship Troopers. And when I found out that Paul Verhoeven was going to make a film version of Starship Troopers with the same writers as RoboCop, I thought, this is just going to be glorious. And then the trailer started coming out, and it looked violent, and it looked the bugs looked fantastic and everything else. And I remember watching Starship Troopers for the first time just going, oh my God. All the humor, all that sly, dark wit that worked in RoboCop falls completely flat on its face in this context. Special effects, second to none in its day, but it just fell flat as a movie. And I'm sure other people got a very different experience because it was a big hit and so forth. And over the years, I can understand what he was going for, but it still just doesn't work for me. It doesn't have the same wit that I think RoboCop did in that whole sarcasm of that whole... parody, almost parody of what they're talking about. And it doesn't quite work with Starship Troopers, but that's now I look at it that way. Back then, I just went, fucking ripped me off, dudes. All right, your number three.
My number three is a film that we met over, which was Terminator 4.
Ah, yes.
Oh, my God. I have never been that angry about a film. Like, just not only to miss and lose everything that the series was about, but then just to ass fuck everything that you could possibly get right in that film.
Salvation, James.
I've never had such a cold, unremovable pain in my stomach when I've walked out of a cinema as I did when I walked out of that.
I think there's one film that affected you even worse.
Which one was that?
Wouldn't it be? It might be on your list. I don't want to say.
It might be on my
list. Yeah,
so.
It might be on
your... No, not necessarily, man. No, this was because for me, I connected at a young age to what that whole concept of technology going too far and stuff like this. As a young kid, I could get that concept. I was like, it's a life lesson for me. Hmm. It was always this thing of love technology, use it, but respect that it can be a danger as well. These were concepts I grew up with, and I grew up with everything that I have tech love because of these films. And just to see somebody produce it to a level that there's just nothing left in it. Like they just pasted it until it was just a commercial stamp. Mm. That they could put on toys and on fucking movies and
that's McG just for you.
And just McG just took what was a great series and just made it a nightmare concept for me, and I'm just so angry.
I can't even pronounce your name. We'll just call you Perp. All right, you know who we're talking about. 4 wasn't a disappointing event because everyone knew it wouldn't be good once they saw McG's name on it.
Yeah, no, this is, it is good. James is saying that it's nail in the coffin time for me. Yeah, no, look, I don't think I'll ever be able to get over this film because I have tried to rewatch it and I get as violently angry as I did the first
time. That's
funny,
I actually rewatched it not long ago and I kind of went, peh. Yeah. It's kind of, I actually have the same feeling towards that other film that we're going to talk about because I actually watched that. Perspicuousness. Okay. That's a really awkward name to use.
And awesome.
That's great, though. All right. My number two is Transformers Revenge of the Fallen.
Oh, me too.
Oh, there
exactly
you go.
Exactly the same positioning as well.
Yeah, because we both loved the first Transformers so much, and the idea of giant smashing robots.
And we forgave its flaws.
We forgave its flaws because it also had a great sense of humor. The parents were really funny. Everything about the first film worked.
And even Shia LaBeouf did not annoy me.
He didn't annoy me because he was perfectly suitable for the character that he was playing. Megan Fox was actually hot back then. Mm. You know, everything worked in the first film. And then to take everything that worked, screw it all up, throw it out the window, and just give complete crap.
Just another nightmare film. It was just wow.
And I remember we were actually there for the first 5 minutes. I remember we sat there with Sarah, my sister, and when they go, roll out the big guy, and Optimus came out, you and I were sitting there going, yeah, go for it. And then it just started to go steadily downhill. Yeah. And by the time they started bringing out the racist robots and the Devastator with its testicles and the little humping robot, it's like, what are you doing? This thing is just a mess in
it's
every
like
way.
It was an entire film of mechanical owls.
And when it wasn't that, you had the parents getting stoned and being stupid.
Yeah.
And it's like you sit there going, what are you doing?
Who are
with
you
this?
Trying to aim at with this film? It's like, oh, duh. It's like the, you know, it's the opposite to what Transformers Salvation is for me. It's like Terminator Salvation.
They could be very easily intermixed, these two
films.
Well,
no, because they're kind of the opposite ends of the spectrum. One's just, you know, tried to put everything in and put it to the level where nothing even makes sense anymore because it's just a string of things that make fans happy. Mm-hmm. Like, it was the ultimate fan movie. And then there was this that just completely missed it and ballsed up every production producer mistake for, like, the last 25 years and put it in one film. It was like everything that you shouldn't do in a film was in that film.
And we even go so far as, I mean, we're talking about every detail of this film. Yeah. It even went so far as to make Megan Fox look unattractive.
Yeah.
So everything was gone in this film. It wasn't even like we had eye candy. The only thing that still worked in Transformers Revenge of the Fallen was ILM's work.
Yeah.
The robots looked great,
but
there was just nothing for them to do. The film was just a waste of space, you know? The third Transformers film I have high hopes for, and this is a film that we could be very, very disappointed with.
Mm.
My 12-year-old is actually keeps seeing the trailers for it and going, you're going to be disappointed, Dad. You're going to be, even he is so disappointed by the second one that he thinks the third one's going to suck, you know? So I think, Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, that was a real, smack in the face to everybody who liked the first Transformers. Mm. And yet the film went on to make $400 and something million around the world. Jeez. It's a huge success. And you sit there and look at it and go, what did you see in this film?
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, so we both got our number twos out there. And it's a very appropriate that it's number two. Don't you think?
Yeah.
All right, my number one is the one that I think you're going to kind of spin out on. I think I know what your number one is now. My number one is Alien 3.
Oh.
I had the exact same anger towards Alien 3 that you had towards Terminator Salvation.
Mm.
I actually, for many years, would not forgive that film.
Mm.
I was so angry at that film when I came out of it. Here we took Ridley Scott's original masterpiece. Then we did James Cameron's stellar follow-up. We took everything we loved from that film and killed them off in the first minute of the next film and basically said, we're going to do something else with this. And then proceed to bombard me for 2 hours with a senseless, stupid, moronic film where I didn't care about anyone, and it was, on top of that, not that well made to boot.
Mm.
We had already established great alien effects and everything else, and then we throw all that out and we put this stupidly looking matted miniature bouncing off walls and stuff, and you just sit there and go, this is just not effective in any way, shape, or form. Hated that film. Once again, a film that I have softened on over the years, and I watched it, and you and I disagree on this, because I hated Alien 3 so much, I liked the fourth one because it was better than the third one. You know what I mean? I just really disliked the third Alien so much at the time. It was so hyped up, and I was so waiting for that film. We'd come off two great films, and then for it to be the film it was really disappointed me. Mm. I've watched it, and I own it downstairs in the quadrilogy set, and I've watched it in a few more times. And yes, I can watch it, and you know, there's some good moments in it and stuff. Mm. But I always think back to the anger that I had on that film. And that's why I say over a lot of things, which is you can rewatch films later and change your mind on stuff. Because once you've got past the hype machine, once you get past that initial impact of how bad it was, you can sometimes go back and look at a film and go, okay, I can see there are good moments in there. Now the emotions are gone. You know what I mean? Mm. And that's what's kind of happened with Alien 3. The emotions are gone now. I've passed it. And now I can basically look at it and go, there are some good stuff. There is some good things in there. But it will never. I've never had a film that gave me such a response to a film as Alien 3. For me, that is like the most vicious I've ever been to a film, because I was so angry at it. So hit us with your number one anger.
My number one is Matrix 3.
Oh, not the one I thought it was going to be.
What did you think?
It was going to be Wolverine.
No. Look, Wolverine is just, it's not going on any lists. I'm never going to mention it. It's no, seriously, I'm writing it out of my life history.
James is saying not Wolverine.
Yeah.
I think we all expected that.
Yeah, no, look, honestly, Wolverine, whatever. It's there. But Matrix 3 was a film where it was like, two left us all confused. That was what it did. Like, we were all unsure of kind of where they were going with it. We were like, wow, that was big budgety and there was lots going on, and I guess it was kind of cool, but I don't really know what you were trying to tell me. And you know, like, when we got to 3, I got to the end of that film and walked out and just walked home, and it was about a 25-minute walk. And the whole walk home, I was like, why am I just so disappointed? Like, I couldn't phase it. I was like, it had everything I should want in a film. It had lots of violence, and it had giant mechs, and it had special effects scenes bigger than anything I had ever seen in my life. You had connections for all the side stories that I had read, like The Kid, which is one of the Animatrix films.
The Kid
is in the film, and it was like everything was connected, and it just did nothing for me. Like, I was just like, that was just rubbish.
That's funny, because it didn't have that effect on me. I kind of walked away from Matrix 3 going, it was what it was. And it's like, I felt that way about the second two Matrix films. I think they have great moments.
Yeah.
Great action set pieces. Like, even the third one's got that amazing battle scene at the end with the mechs and all. You know, that's fine. But I just kind of felt like The Matrix was a film that never needed sequels. So, you know, you watch The Matrix and go, that's it, it's done.
It's kind of like an afterthought.
Yeah, you know? And so the sequels for me were never that disappointing. They were just kind of like, yeah, they are what they are, you know? Yeah. And it's kind of how I felt. Somebody had mentioned in our chat room way back at the beginning saying, I bet Star Wars plays a factor on this list. I don't have a hatred towards the trilogy.
I don't. I don't like them. I will never watch them again. But it's just out of a fact that when I watch them, I'm just like, whatever.
I look at it and go, the original trilogy is the original trilogy. The second trilogy is the second trilogy. I have no hatred towards the second trilogy. It is what it is. And it's once again, it has some really good stuff in it. Yeah. Some unsurpassable special effects. I mean, this is the number one special effects company in the world doing what they do. You would hope it has unsurpassable special effects. But, you know, it is what it is. And I think when you put the new trilogy together as three films, it actually makes the first film make more sense because it does have a through line that follows through. And if you watch it as a trilogy, it's an okay trilogy. It just will never compare to the original trilogy.
Yeah.
It'll just never relate to it. The original trilogy is the original trilogy, and it is a great film for what it was in its time. There's no doubting that, and I don't think we really ever needed to come back to it. Mm. If you watch like when it comes out in Blu-ray, I will buy all six films. I won't watch them in the proper chronology, though, because as far as I'm concerned, the first three don't really relate to the next trilogy, you know? And that's kind of how I feel about it. I don't have a lot of hatred towards them.
It's funny because the more years that go on, the more I accept the original trilogy because of one thing, because of the lore that it's pushed into the world of games.
Mm.
And for me, I hate it less and less because the more of the new stuff that I see showing up in these films, the more it becomes part of a culture for me.
Yeah.
And I'll never rewatch them because I didn't actually enjoy them that much as a friend, as I would with, you know, other films that I don't particularly like. But there are now elements that I can go, all right, I accept that wouldn't exist if it wasn't for those films.
That's right. And there's also circumstance as well. My son loves the prequel trilogy. He loves the Jedi's going apeshit with lightsabers and so forth. So he loves all of that, and he loves the high-tech effects. And so I get to watch the Star Wars films with the glee of him. And so that kind of softens them a little bit too, because I can see what he sees in them, And so there's always that circumstance situation as well, where you sit there and go, he loves them so much that, you know, that it's fun to watch it with him and get that kind of joy that he gets out of it, which is the same joy at 12 I was getting from the original trilogy, you know? Yeah. So you can kind of see where it all falls into place. I have a couple of honorary mentions that I want to throw out there just because this list is huge.
Yeah.
And there's a couple here that I thought would be very interesting just to bring up because they're very unusual. One of them, I'll save the one for the last. Star Trek V, The Final Frontier was a big disappointment for me because Star Trek II is arguably the best Star Trek film. III was a great follow-on. Star Trek IV, I just have a blast watching. It's where they go back in time and it's very funny. And then to completely wash their hands of everything and turn out what is the worst Star Trek film piece of rubbish of all time. You sit there and go, wow, you guys really blew that, you know? You blew a goat with that one, let's face it. X-Men Origins Wolverine I had on that honorary mentions, because it was just a disappointment. You sit there and go, even X-Men 3 looks good compared to X-Men Wolverine, you know?
No, it doesn't. It's still a shit film.
Superman Returns was a big disappointment. I mean, you've got Bryan Singer coming off of the X-Men films saying how much he loves Superman. You've got big special effects. You know, the trailers were looking good. This film should have been good. And yet you kind of walk away and it wasn't that I hated it. You just walk away going, what was that all about? You know, it's kind of, But the one that I thought that would spin you out the most is A Clockwork Orange.
Oh.
Now, I gotta explain this. I love A Clockwork Orange, okay? And I own it downstairs. I love A Clockwork Orange. But it's a film that I actually had to grow to love. And it's a very interesting story, which is that when I first saw A Clockwork Orange, I was in my 20s. And I had never seen it because it was a film that had been kind of buried and suppressed for so long. It never came out on video. Kubrick didn't want to release. There were so many factors behind it. It showed up every now and again as midnight screenings at places like the Valhalla Cinema and stuff like that. And I really wanted to see it. I just never got around to seeing it. Finally, in my 20s, it was having a run at the Valhalla at a midnight screenings, and I said, I'm going to see it. And I went with my then-girlfriend, this girl called Kim. And I think it was a situation where this film had been so built up over the years for me. I was a huge Kubrick fan. I'd seen every Kubrick film. This was the missing Kubrick in my collection. Everybody talked about what an amazing film it was and blah, blah, blah. And now I've got to stress that one of the things I've always associated with Kubrick is perfection and precise filmmaking. And there's a filmmaker out there who some of you may know, some of you may not, by the name of Ken Russell, who, if you wanted to use a word to sum up his filmmaking style, you would say messy and chaotic. right? I sat down, started watching Clockwork Orange, and I felt like I was watching a Ken Russell film. Mm. It didn't feel like Kubrick. It felt messy, and it felt disorganized, and it felt roughly put together, and I didn't get it, you know? And I actually, and it pains me to say this, because I never walk out of movies. And in fact, since this time, I've never walked out of a movie, probably because of this experience, which is I walked out of Clockwork Orange at the intermission. And I came home. I was so angry that I had built this film up so much, and it was just, I didn't get it. And I hated it, and I hated what I was watching. And I went and talked to my friends who were all film buffs, and they basically couldn't believe that I'd walked out of a Clockwork Orange. And it was about 3 months later, 4 months later, I'd broken up with that girlfriend. I think she probably had something to do with it as well. And it was showing as a midnight screening, and they said, you are seeing it again. And they dragged me to the midnight screening to see the Clockwork Orange a second time. And it was like a window opened. It was I got it. And I've loved the film ever since on that second screening. I was seeing it with the right people, the right circumstances. I'd already had that initial hatred put out of me. So I got to see it now with fresh eyes. It's like I didn't have that anticipation built up for it. And I got to watch it for the film that it is. And I got the fact that it is a very dark comedy. And it is a very, very satirical film. It's a dark satire on society, and I got the joke this time, and I got what the message was of that film, and I've loved the film ever since. But it just shows you how build
and
up
also can... and also people you go with, because I was actually almost put on my list, A Scanner Darkly, which is one of my favorite films. But the first time I watched that, with a girl that didn't get it at all, and when I walked out, I had a hatred that wasn't mine, and I always felt really disappointed walking out, where I was kind of like, I felt like I liked that, but not right now.
And this is why I think it's very important that if you do...
Damn right.
If you do dislike films, really have a strong emotional reaction to a film, it is good to revisit that film after the hatred has died. After you've gotten over that.
And watch it without people around is the other thing. Like, give yourself a chance to enjoy it based not on
It's like I have rewatched Terminator Salvation since its initial release, and I didn't like it in its initial release. And I don't have a hatred for that film now. I know you still have a passion for that. But it's like Alien 3. I look at it now and I go, it has moments, you know, and there are moments in it where you sit there and go, that's kind of a clever... This, I still stand by, I think the sequence in the river with the robotic snakes is actually a really well-done sequence.
Yeah.
It's not a good film.
Yeah.
But... as you can look at it, and this is kind of why I'm going to watch Transformers 2. I'm seeing Transformers 3 again. I really want to see the first two again. And a long time has passed now. I haven't seen it since the cinema. It's time to rewatch it just to remind myself.
Oh, I've had it playing at work.
See, you've seen it since. I haven't seen it since. So I'm going to watch it.
Dude, trust me. It's not worth it. No, I mean, it was annoying me from a distance on a TV, and it wasn't even the full movie. Like, it's going to stick that bad.
Names are confusing me, says Zed. What names of what?
Anyway.
Rocky Horror that placed rock. I'm just trying to see if anybody else has got a few in here that they want to throw out there while I'm here. It was the vibe, Dave, the vibe. Yeah, absolutely, it was the vibe. That's Clockwork Orange. It's the vibe, Dave. So Clockwork Orange is one of those really interesting ones where you sit there and look at it and go, that was a film that I'm so glad that my friends made me watch again. You know, because it could have been a wasted opportunity.
Yeah.
And I do say to you, anybody out there, if you've seen a film that you've really hated and you feel like you're out of step and other people seem to have liked it, give it some time. Watch it again.
Yeah.
Because you might find you get it the second time. Another film that's a perfect example, not one that I hated, just one I didn't get, was Fifth Element. I remember watching Fifth Element for the first time, and I just watched it going, I don't get this movie. I don't understand. I don't like this movie. I don't get it. And I actually watched it a second time. It was the second time it clicked. I went, oh, I get it. It's an obtuse little French comedy, just with an enormous budget, you know? And once you get the joke, the Fifth Element is hysterical, you know? Yeah. But if you don't accept the fact that it's a quirky little French comedy with a $100 million budget, then you will never get that movie, you know? Okay, James from Melbourne says Independence Day and Poltergeist 2. Well, no, Poltergeist 2 is just crap, dude. Poltergeist 2 is... I've rewatched Poltergeist 2. It's just a bad movie. Independence Day, I actually really enjoyed Independence Day when I saw it at the cinema. I thought it was stupid, but I really enjoyed it. All right, that's it. I think we're done. If you agree or disagree with anything that we've actually had to say today, or you have a really wonderful, I would love to hear about a disappointing event. If you've got a really disappointing event in your life when it came to cinema, please write it into us. We'd like to hear your experiences. Send those to feedback@filmactually.com, or you can voicemail us at 02-8011-3167. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Tumblr. You can find us all over the place. Just go to geekactually.com, click the follow us link. You can find all of our various bits and pieces. If you do follow me on Twitter at David McVeigh, I would suggest to you that you should also follow at Geek Actually. I'm trying to separate the two accounts, and I haven't had much luck. So please follow Geek Actually at Geek Actually, all one word, if you are just following me. So that way we can help finally separate these up a little bit. We should shout out to a few of our friends here, I guess. And say Charlie and Brad are back. Reboundradio.com is their new site. These are the former hosts of the Movie Fan House. Their new podcast is now up as well. So go to reboundradio.com and you can hear them back doing what they do best. So go check them out. WeekendRonan.com, home of the Real Junkies podcast. You can also find that on iTunes, R-E-E-L Junkies. I believe this week they did Green Lantern. I haven't had a listen to it yet, and I can't wait to, because I want to hear what they say, because Green Lantern is being slaughtered by everybody. We also want to shout out to Rachel over at the Funky Film Show, Thursdays on Radio Fremantle 107.9 FM, or if you missed the live show, you can listen to it at RadioFremantle.com. Josh, what have you been up to?
RawDLC.com is a gaming website. Go over there and check it out. If anybody's got a little bit of time, shoot over there. There is a latest review for L.A. Noir, which we're doing with the production company Studio 33. If you guys have a chance, check it out. It's really high quality. It's really cool.
Excellent. Excellent. We also want to shout out to our friend Josh Spencer over at attackninja.blogspot.com. He does our cartoon artwork that you can see on our website and in our cover arts. He's fantastic. He does other artwork as well. Go check him out. He's really good. And because he was in our chat room earlier, I guess we'll give him a shout out, because he's always good value as well, which is, of course, our friend Richard Gray over at TheRealBits.com. His reviews are actually really good. Go read them. All right, we are finishing the show. Oh, but very quick shout-out, because this is our last show of the day. Thank you very much to our chat room. We couldn't do this without you guys. You guys are brilliant. You can follow this show. We do it live. Just go to geekactually.com/live. We start our broadcasting day at around 12 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, which is UTC plus 10, every Saturday. And we do Geek Actually followed by Film Actually. Come and join the chat room 1 week. It's a lot of fun.
Yep.
All right. So now that that's all out of the way, I want to say thank you, Josh. Thank you, everybody. This week, we are actually finished with a track from Hans Zimmer and Michael Powell's, it's not Michael Powell at all, it's John Powell.
John Powell.
I got that wrong. All right, Hans Zimmer and John Powell's fantastic score for Kung Fu Panda 2, which you can get on iTunes and at any music retailer. It is well worth it. It's a great score. Mm-hmm. We're going to finish with a track called Po and Shen, Face to Face. It's a very long track. We've just pulled an extraction from it. So just to give you a taste. So with that all being said, you have nothing to add?
Nope.
I have nothing to add, so in that case, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies, and we'll see you all next week. Bye now.